Drehbühne. 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 Das ist ein Podcast vom Stadttheater Schaffhausen.
Herzlich willkommen, liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, zu unserer heutigen Folge der Drehbühne, die in englischer Sprache stattfindet und wo wir den Gast Alexander de Vriend, Regisseur und Leiter der Theatergruppe Entrourenhout aus Belgien, begrüßen. Entrourenhout war schon mehrfach bei uns im Stadttheater zu Besuch, 2015 mit der Produktion A History of Everything, 2017 mit der Produktion Fight Night und zuletzt 2019 mit der Produktion Lies. Wir dürfen wieder spielen für maximal 50 Besucher und wir freuen uns sehr darauf, Ihnen am 4. Mai die neueste Produktion von Entrourenhout, Are We Not Drawn to New Era, vorstellen zu dürfen. Gleichzeitig sprechen wir mit Alexander de Vriend aber auch darüber, was es bedeutet, in Zeiten von Kontaktbeschränkungen und Lockdowns Theaterproduktionen zu realisieren. Und wir sprechen über seine neueste Arbeit, TM, die erst letzte Woche Premiere feiern durfte. Das alles tun wir aber, weil Are We Not Drawn auch in englischer Sprache stattfinden wird, auf Englisch. Und deswegen wechseln wir jetzt die Sprache und hoffen, Sie bleiben dabei. Right, welcome to the show, Alexander, and welcome to our Drehbühne, our revolving stage, our weekly podcast live from the Stadttheater in Schaffhausen. Our guest today is Alexander de Vriend, director and head of Entrourenhout, Belgian theatre company. Is head of actually an accurate description, or how do you work? Are you very hierarchical in your institution, or are you just an ensemble of members who all have the same rights?
No, we call it a compatible collective. Each has his own strengths and brings that to the table, and only in terms of difficulties and when you really have to make a decision, the hierarchy is just organically there.
A compatible collective, that sounds like a very good model also for political institutions and all kinds of other decision-making processes. Alexander, introduce yourself to us, please.
Unser Gast der Woche.
Hello, I'm Alexander de Vriend. I'm 44 years old and been in Entrourenhout for over 20 years now, making shows, directing shows all over the world, and recently became a father of my first daughter 2 years ago, which defines me also heavily at the moment.
Well, nice that means normally with your companies and your shows, you're all over the world, and now you've been forced to be at home a lot. Luckily, you've had good reasons to be at home as well. But still, how are you coping in the current pandemic? What's the current pandemic or the last year been like for you, for a company that is used to show its productions worldwide, from Edinburgh to Sydney to Switzerland to Central Europe to even the USA? How has the pandemic impacted your work, and how are you coping?
The problem is always when it's hard, it's also easy to imagine other people having it harder. It's just a thing. But it happened. It happened that it took us on our strengths. Our strengths are physical contact, most sometimes interactive theater, like Fight Night or Lies, or which is of course also the whole point of theater, and the international touring. And it felt like the virus really took us on our two strengths. So in the beginning, I really said, okay, we're going to sit this one out. But at a certain point, I think we were over 400 canceled shows, which is, of course, okay, nothing compared with sometimes other people had. But my tricky thing was that at a certain point, you also realize that you give work to freelancers and other actors, and which was something that happened organically. It was just part of life before that. But suddenly when that's gone, you feel your responsibility as a work provider sometimes. So that drove me a little bit to try and find maybe a way out or maybe a way to connect us again, which resulted in TM we will talk about maybe later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that solution of some of those problems that you've addressed later. I want to look back at your work, first of all. Entrourenhout has been around for close to 20 years. You've never actually done a play that was written beforehand. You've never taken a Shakespeare or a Molière play and said, okay, I want to do Macbeth or whatever. You've always devised work, made conceptual production that have been developed within your ensemble, within your collective. And there's always been work that's been very ideas-driven. How did that start? I mean, what was the starting point for you to decide that you want to work that way with your actors and your colleagues?
That's the problem, I think, when you're young and you're doing things, you don't know why. It's only afterwards when you try to make a story out of it and try to explain the way you do. But I think it's a little bit like, I don't know, when you're a rock band, you start with covers, but when you make electronic music, you can't. I don't know, maybe that's the closest, it's an easy comparison, and maybe too easy, but maybe there's no question that you would do all the work, because that's not how you think, that's not what your strengths are, and especially not where your fascination was. And it's not that I don't want to, but I prefer to talk about the now. I at this moment in a form that suits that, and I always felt that finding a new form or a new idea helped me more than finding the universal or the adaptation of older plays. It was a bit for me harder to talk about the now in that way than directly devise new work that can only happen at this moment.
Yeah, your productions are always defined by very clear ideas or very clear settings or setups that frame what is going to happen in the production or in the show. I want to talk about a show that many of our audience members may well remember. It's called A History of Everything. You produced that about 10 years ago and visited Schaffhausen with it in 2015. And what you did in that show was you attempted, it's a bit of a ludicrous attempt if you talk about it without having seen the show, you attempted to tell the history of the world, or a history of the world, backwards. So from the now, from the current events, yesterday, today, 2 days ago, right back to the moment that the Earth was created. Yeah, and the way the show worked was... you told this history backwards by decisive moments, decisive quotes of our collective history, of world history. And we are going to listen to a short excerpt from that, covering the years 1968 to 1955, starting with the moon landing and ending with Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space, in 1955. 10 years of world history in under 2 minutes. This is A History of Everything.
That's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
If you're going to San Francisco...
Fly with flower echoes through the land.
I can't get no satisfaction.
The Aboriginal people of Australia are only now given the right to vote.
We all live in a yellow submarine.
Soyez réaliste, demandez l'impossible, aim for the impossible.
Prague Spring. Socialism with a human face.
Crushed by Russian military might.
A revolution is not a dinner party.
Nike was found.
Or painting a picture. Or writing an essay.
In the future, everybody will be famous for 15 minutes.
It must not be advanced lightly. Reading too many books is harmful.
Ring Harvey Oswald.
Happy birthday to you.
I still have a dream.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream.
Cuban Missile Crisis.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
The end of Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward. In order to feed half the population, it's better to let the other half starve. It's estimated that between 20 and 43 million people die.
Russia gets the first man into space. Yuri Gagarin.
I looked and I looked and I looked, but I didn't see God.
So that was a short excerpt from A History of Everything, giving you an insight on how Alexander works. And the reason why we chose this is that your new show that you're going to be performing in Schaffhausen next week on the 4th of May is in a way similar. It's called Are We Not Drawn Onward to New Era, which is a palindrome. You can read it forwards and backwards. And basically, the idea is looking at the environmental crisis that we are currently facing and the possible end of the human race in some time, whether life will not go back to where it was hundreds or millions of years ago. Can you elaborate on that a bit, Alexander?
Well, history of everything was created out of an urge. I remember I was reading a lot of Richard Dawkins, Jared Diamond, Brian Greene, like really scientific literature, just as a fascination of the world, as if I missed my history lessons in high school and wanted to like catch up. And also draw from an atheistic point of view. Like sometimes people said, like, what do you believe in as an atheist? And I was like, so much. Look, so much more than there's so much more history that I want to share. And so these ideas and these books were always there. What the hell am I going to do with it? And it was only in Sydney Theatre when Kate Blanchett and her husband Andrew Upton were there. And they kind of said, what do you want to do? What, we give you carte blanche. You can do everything you want. We want to support you. And then I was just suddenly this crazy idea of like, not even the history of the world, I know, but history of everything. Like, let's try to put all this information I've learned and try to grasp the ungraspable. And also, I think the main drive was there. I feel so important in my ego, in my life, where I am now. But I'm so irrelevant in the course of everything. How do you put those two paradoxical, completely incompatible thoughts together? And that was more the drive of the show, I think. And then moving to Are We Not Run On With Two New Era, it was only afterwards that David, my best friend and general manager, said, we have to make it into a trilogy because it uses the same forms. Like it was not that the conception was not meant that way. But Are We Not Run Onward was driven by the guilt, I think, that most of us feel about being here. Like, we feel guilty about our, like, or we made feel guilty about our presence on the world. We our footprint, our, and we try to do things like donate, recycle, maybe have one child less. Like constantly we were being made aware of it. And I was like, okay. How, and also when I was reading about climate change or I hear the scientists, we're doomed. There's not that even if we act now, it seems like there's no help. And then as an artist, you think, okay, it feels like the most important thing that we have to talk about, but it also feels like the most difficult thing to talk about as an artist because people already know. Like most of the audience will already sit there. Don't tell me what we already know. We're not here in the theater to know what we already know. So I wanted to provide a way of thinking or a way of reflecting on this problematic, or on this problem in a way that maybe none of us have done yet. And that's how the palindrome form. I can't explain too much, of course, in the show because you have to see it to do it. But some people say it seems like a fairy tale of the impossible made possible. Maybe that's the way.
I think one of the main questions, of course, is you say, are we doomed? Because obviously, even if we cut our carbon emissions to zero, which is impossible within 1 or 2 years, even if we manage to clean the oceans and have sustainable products and eat vegan and get rid of plastic and all these problems that are massive, of course, to our environmental system, even then it seems that we're doomed. But one of the main questions that you're asking, is this actually the end or is this a new beginning? Is it salvation or are we doomed, you know?
Yeah, I think you're totally right, Jens. It's like I'm a very optimistic person. I think most of my work, even when I talk about capitalism or climate change or a cult in our new play, I'm always believing in a sort of positive take and a sort of like even every action makes a difference, whether it's you doing something small on the street to somebody else and a person say a nice word, or whether you do something like, I don't know, recycle one thing, it matters somewhere in the spiral of life. And So for me, it's never about driving home the determinism. For me, there's always a level of, I won't necessarily say choice, because that seems difficult in these bigger issues that seem out of our control, but what can we control in there and how we can reflect on that? And also, I do have to say, this play changed a little bit. I think the first version was created before the climate youth came, before Greta Thunberg was there. And I think when she started to speak up, there was also, we call them Youth for Climate in Belgium. There were a couple of youngsters skipping school, and I know that I also felt like, okay, but I can help you. You gave me the words to find the right tone in the middle for this new beginning. So I was also ready to change it a little bit from a sort of guilt feel to a sort of like, no, let's do it feel in the same play. But I was lucky enough that we could change it in the version, because the first version had a big orchestra, a sextet. Because we wanted to make a sort of, the idea grew from making a big stage show. But when it was there, it felt for me a bit strange to make a show about, I don't know, sustainability and climate change and having like 12 actors. This is not the strength of Ontroerend Goed. The strength of Ontroerend Goed is that we can play everywhere, go places. Let's skip this and make it like do it with six people and a technician, and let's travel. That gave me the opportunity to also change a little bit the play to what you're saying even now was even stronger in that way.
One of the interesting aspects of your work coming on to different shows that we want to talk about is, as you said beforehand, you don't take the moral high ground trying to explain our follies or fatalities or whatever to us as audience members. But you very strongly believe that everything that we as individuals do matters. And that brings me to the very often dreaded theme of audience participation. Usually in theatre, audience participation is something that people are seriously scared about, especially spectators. When I go to see a show and I know I have to participate as an audience member, I think, oh my God, please, please don't give me this. Your shows are utterly different, and I want to play an excerpt from your production Fight Night, which a lot of our visitors may remember from 2017. Fight Night is about how we as individuals, but then in the end collectively through our decisions, participate in elections and in basically decision-making processes politically. It's an arena live on stage where you have a set of candidates, and these candidates, they go through a popularity contest with the goal that one after the other of these candidates is eliminated and there is a winner.
Ladies, gentlemen, lend me your ears. It has often been said that you can't have a show without an audience, and well, tonight, that is more true than ever. Because tonight, we will not only need your eyes, your ears, but at the center of everything will be your voice. Ladies, gentlemen, welcome to Fight Night.
12. That's the most important number for me now. I represent 12 people sitting here tonight. We are the smallest group. We are the minority. And although I don't know who you are, or if we're gonna stick together, the 13 of us represent something that the others don't have. And I'm going to make sure that doesn't get lost. I'm going to make sure that your vote counted.
You probably feel similar about making audience members uncomfortable. And how do you work around that in your work?
Well, the thing is, and sometimes I say it as a joke, but I mean it. Like, I don't like interactive theater. But what I mean is, I don't like interactive theater where I am an audience are responsible for the artistic content of a show. Like, I paid a ticket, I bought a ticket, and I want an idea of an artistic vision or a journey that the artist gave me. And I don't want to have the feeling that, like, okay, you can have a sort of choose your own adventure, but, like, don't depend on me for the show. But, of course, for me, that is difficult because theater, in its essence, is a mutual conversation. Even in its most classical form, we are sitting there laughing, influencing how the actor feels. Look, we all know that the actor sometimes says, oh, I had a good night, the audience was amazing tonight. So inherently, the strength of the medium is its interaction. And for me, from the moment movies are took over the one-sided conversation, for me, it just made sense to have the mutual conversation and use that as a strength that no other medium can do. And for instance, in Fight Night, I wanted to make a show about voting. In Belgian government, we were without a government for 360 days or something like that. And so it felt like, is this whole democratic process, why do we even vote? And of course, when you want to make a show about that, you can show politicians on stage and voters and have them talk to each other. And I had to identify with the voter. But what if I just gave you the voting device? It's like one step that I take out. It's direct communication. And for me, that's always in the black box of theater. I don't see the black box of theater as audience stage. For me, the black box of theater is always one room. And you have to have a very good reason to get rid of the normal end on stage. Like with History of Everything or Drawn Onward, there's no need, so why would I? But if you have a good reason, there's beauty, like Lies, the show about capitalism. When I think about capitalism, and I think most of us, we already feel left out, right? We feel like we don't control the 1%. We're definitely not the 1%. So what if I make a show in capitalism, about the financial system, where I make you feel the 1% and put you behind the buttons or the decision making? So that's also, for me, it made sense to turn that around and turn you into a banker and who makes the right decisions. Maybe we understand the financial system more. So those are the ways for me for interactive theater. But both Lies, I think, and Fight Night, I don't think anybody who, like, there's not a moment where somebody from the audience is, I don't know, put into the front, or like a stand-up comedian sometimes chooses somebody on the first row. Like, there's none of that. For me, it's just inherently the strength of the medium and put that at its essence, as its core.
The beginning of Fight Night, one of the actors from the company says, it has been said that you can't have a show without an audience. And tonight, that is more clear than ever. Now, you had to learn the hard way in the last year that you can't have a show without an audience, because even if it's a small format show and the audience participation show and so on, a show like Lies, you still have contact and you're still very close as a performer with the audience members. And theater hasn't been possible in those ways. Now, with TM, with your newest show, you've created a very individual experience. And I want to talk to you, before we talk about TM, I want to talk to you about one of your oldest productions called A Game of You. You were invited to the Salzburger Festspiele, Salzburg Festival Young Directors Project, with this production, A Game of You. The idea of this production was that the audience members would have a one-on-one meeting with a performer or with an actor and would have a very individual experience.
The third group in the Young Directors Project 211 comes from Belgium. And this, again, is a very interactive idea of project. They are inviting the theater visitors to enter a black box.
And the moment you enter the black box, a play about you starts. A play about each and every audience member who enters this room.
The
characteristic is actually that you go through a whole world all by yourself. You meet certain people.
In each room, somebody from the theater ensemble is waiting for you and playing for you. And what this actor is playing for you is all about you, the visitor.
I think we truly try to crawl in people their minds. You're kind of confronted with yourself, I think.
But in a pleasant way.
Yeah.
You know, we must say.
Yeah.
In a kind way.
Definitely.
That was an excerpt from A Game of You, production by Entour and Good, produced 10 years ago. Did you draw on that experience now for TM, that idea that you have an individual contact with an individual audience member, or did TM grow out of completely different ideas and concepts?
Well, I think A Game of You was already the third one-on-one show we created in a short amount of time. I think over a course of 4 years, we made three individual one-on-one experiences. The first one was A Smile of Your Face, where the audience was blindfolded and handcuffed in a wheelchair and had a sort of sensory journey, a 30-minute sensory journey on its own. Internal was then the second one, where you had a sort of speed dating. For me, is like, how fast do you care about a stranger, which caused a lot of controversy in Edinburgh. And I think Game of You was, for me, the culmination of all the experiences we drawn from doing all these one-on-one shows. And I still think it's one of my strongest shows. It's one... It highlights also what I really want to say about. It's a hard one. When it's one of your favorite, there's many, many different reasons why I would draw upon. But for this conversation, I would say a lot of times one-on-one performances were called intimate performances, sensory performances. And for me, it was like, no, it's just a way of theater that makes something else completely possible, but it doesn't necessarily need to be intimate. It doesn't necessarily need to be sensory. It's just a possibility of a form. And for me, this show, let's say a critic once said, it's about the distance between you and a mirror. What happens in that distance and how other people see it. I thought that was a very poetic expression for what we talk about. But after we made that show, I also felt like with one-on-one experiences, like I don't know what to do with it anymore. I felt like I made, it's round, it's finished, it's over. So I think we never returned there.
Mm-hmm. And now, 10 years later, you have a situation where probably you had to even discuss with your company members, you had to do Zoom calls and so on. And suddenly you're sat in your own home, on your own, locked down, and it brings you back to productions like A Game of You, where you have one audience member opposite one performer, very intimate, very, very close relationship, where whatever the audience member does or how he reacts also influences the performance of the performer. Let's talk about TM, about your newest work. And anyone who is interested in actually experiencing TM can do this on the website of Entour and Trout. There are links to all the different theatres worldwide, European-wide, that are involved in this project. There are still, I think, some tickets available on some theatre sites. We'll put the links in the podcast show notes as well. The show works... like we're doing now, like a Zoom call. So you enter into a video call with a performer, and then what happens?
Well, I would first say is like I've created a sort of a secret organization, and we want to see if you buy a ticket. We want to see it's for you, us to see if you can be part of our organization. And in order to see that, we have a sort of intake. We first present you the organization. There's a couple of people and videos to show you what we're all about. And then there's an intake conversation, an interview, you could say, to see if you are eligible. But you also meet before and after the show people from all over the world, other visitors.
That was very stunning to me, a very interesting aspect, that you have the situation like in a foyer, when you're waiting to be let in, you meet random people that you're just standing in the queue together with. I thought that was very, very interesting that you had this kind of format, that you're in a waiting room with five or six people that you might know, might not know. And it's in a way anonymous, but in another way it's very personal. And then you get into this personal test with one of the performers. We're not going to give away too much. All I can say, it's a very, very personal experience. It is breathtaking and very convincing. So anyone who wants to check out this new online show, TM, please visit entrourendgoed.be, entrourendgoed.be, and check out information for tickets. Back to Are We Not Drawn? Are you going to have to rehearse before you come here again? How long has the show been dormant and offline? You're going to do two performances now in Switzerland. You're going to get back on track. It's probably a brave new world that is expecting you now.
Yeah, I'm not even joining the company because my wife is playing in it, and otherwise we're in trouble with the daughter, so I'm staying home. No, they're so looking forward to it. Yeah, it's like when they heard they were going to play the show. The cast was just jubilant. Like we crave a theater, even if it's only for 50 people. It's great. And what is also great, I think, about Are We Not Renowned, is that it feels like it's going to have again a new relevance. It's like in this middle, like people are wearing masks, but like I never intended. People are going to think, oh, you added it because of the pandemic, but it was already there. But it's also like, it is about our presence in the world. And some people say that this COVID is even due to us, like, which is, we are interfering with. And that's the beauty about Renowned, I think, because we never literally talk about climate change. We never literally talk about these things. I'm really curious to see if it can people help make sense of what's happening now and how to move on to a new era, which is in the title and in the show. Are we not drawn onward to a new era? Do we have a choice? Do we decide what this new era is? Or is it out of our hands? I think the show is totally about that. And that's what we're living in now. So I'm curious to discover this new era and see what it means for us.
And on that note, we end our conversation with Alexander de Vriend. Thank you very much, Alexander. I'm also very curious to see how the show is going to develop and how it's going to be after this long period of waiting to see a show that has a lot to do with our current situation and the pressing questions to our society and to the human race at the moment. So we're very much looking forward to you coming, your company visiting us on the 4th of May. I'm not sure as of now whether tickets are still available. I think there's a handful of tickets that may still be available. So if you're listening to this and if you feel curious to see the show, check out whether you can be one of the happy few that will visit the show. And we're looking forward to welcoming not you personally, but Entrourendgoed and your wonderful company to Schaffhausen. And thank you very much, Alexander, and all the best for your current and upcoming work.
Thank you very much. Ciao, ciao.
So, liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, das war unser englischsprachiger Drehbühnen-Podcast mit Alexander de Vriend von der Theatergruppe Entrourendgoed. Are We Not Drawn Onward to New Era ist am 4. Mai im Stadttheater Schaffhausen zu erleben. Und in der nächsten Woche begrüße ich Sie hier mit meiner Kollegin Diane Manschott und mit einem besonderen Gast, Alexander Grichtolik, Cembalist und Leiter des Ensembles Deutsche Hofmusik. Und wir sprechen, Sie haben es wahrscheinlich längst erraten, über das anstehende internationale Bachfest, welches vom 12. bis 16. Mai stattfinden wird. Was hat Bach mit Schaffhausen zu tun? Was erwartet unsere Besucher beim Bachfest? Welche Musik wird da klingen? Und so weiter. Machen Sie es gut, bleiben Sie gesund und bis bald auf der Drehbühne.
Drehbühne. Das ist ein Podcast vom Stadttheater Schaffhausen.